Hi, everyone. Look, just a quick advisory here. There are parts of this episode that may contain strong language. So if you've got children in the car or in the room nearby, you might just want to put on some headphones or maybe save this episode for later.
It's going to be rocky again. And people who are inherently or even unconsciously married to the status quo and comfortable with the way it's been will resist in ways that will make it difficult for the female soldiers and their male allies. But we must insist.
That was Megyn Kelly, American journalist and host of NBC News' Megyn Kelly Today. Megyn was an anchor at Fox News before taking on a new role in daytime television. Her transition between the two networks was highly scrutinized, but none of that held Megyn back from trying to use her platform to amplify women's voices. This is the She Innovates podcast, and I'm your host, Michelle King. On our show, we share the challenges and triumphs of women in areas like innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. Megan's going to be sharing some of the personal challenges that she's had to overcome as a woman working in the media industry. She's also going to be talking about why Me Too and Time's Up are just the start of achieving gender equality in the workplace. Hi, Megyn. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michelle.
It's so great to have you here today.
My pleasure.
Look, I thought we'd get started by actually touching a topic that I know you're particularly passionate about, which is Me Too. You know, you've talked about it on your show, you've had guests who've addressed this topic on your show. And so for our listeners today, could you maybe share, you know, what the whole Me Too movement means to you?
Well, I mean, for me, this is about the start of an empowerment revolution. I've said that publicly, and that's by design. I think it is and it must be about much more than sexual harassment. And so I sort of see Time's Up as one tool in our arsenal, right? Like, that's going to go after Me Too, and Time's Up is going to be this area in which we fight sexual harassment and abuse in the workplace or otherwise. And that must stop. And that's a no-brainer, but we haven't been working as actively as we are now to put a stop to it. You know, I think there was a certain acceptance on the part of women that this is a system and we cannot change it. So that's one piece. But the revolution, as I see it, is so much bigger. And those pieces of it have to be folded into the larger effort. Or we're going to have to keep putting out these fires. You know, we're never going to stop completely sexual assault or sexual harassment, but we're going to do a lot more to tamp it down if we can truly fulfill our mission in our empowerment revolution. If we can really gain equality for women in the workplace and outside of the workplace, it'll be so much easier for us to handle the Me Too situations of the world and to diminish them.
That's so true. And so just in that response, you know, you mentioned this idea of the empowerment revolution. Could you maybe share for our listeners, you know, what that is? So what do you mean by that term? What are we really sort of talking about here?
I don't know that, you know, we're speaking with a uniform voice, so I don't want to pretend that I'm speaking for everyone now. But the way I see it is this is about equality and empowerment for women, for real this time. You know, it's like, and now we really mean it. Because, of course, we had our foremothers who were burning their bras in the 70s and made a lot of progress for us in getting us out of what was, in many ways, a dark time for women in our country. I don't mean necessarily in level of happiness, but certainly when it comes to level of equality. And those two things are not necessarily tied, right? I mean, you can be going along happily and not be fully equal. I believe a lot of moms and women were at that place in, say, the 1950s, when it was a time of peace and prosperity in our country. It was a post-war era. People could pay their bills. People felt united. So they were happy, but there's no question women were not equal. And when that problem gets identified and then the women start fighting for it, more unrest happens. And of course, it was happening in many areas, most notably the civil rights era. But my point is, it's not fun, and it's rocky, and it's hard. And it doesn't necessarily mean that happiness is going to rise in equal measure as equality rises. And I almost feel like we're at one of those places again, because I feel like as we continue with, and we mean it now, and we really mean it this time, it's going to be rocky again. And people who are inherently or even unconsciously married to the status quo and comfortable with the way it's been will resist in ways that will make it difficult for the female soldiers and their male allies. But we must insist. We must insist because a door has been open. If we don't walk through it now, we're going to have to wait another 20 years.
I really hope we don't have to wait another 20 years, Megan. You know, for listeners who maybe not familiar with your personal story, would you mind sort of sharing your experience with this particular issue?
Well, if we're talking about sexual harassment only, you know, I've been open about the fact that I was sexually harassed by Roger Ailes, the CEO of Fox News, when I was very young in my tenure there. And I had been harassed earlier in my life. You know, I came to Fox News at 32 years old, so I had been around. I'm a woman born in 1970. We have not been a particularly evolved country when it comes to how we treat our young women. So, of course, I'd experienced quite a fair amount of harassment, some of which I've documented in my book. But then I get to Fox News, and I'm a neophyte in the news business. I have zero power. And I was harassed by my boss, who it began with verbal harassment, really inappropriate comments and language and that kind of thing. And then it graduated to physical attempts to be with me, all of which I rejected, but at great risk to myself. And it was a very scary time in my career. I was very, very concerned that when and if it ultimately culminated in him trying to actually have me, right, graduate from verbal harassment to attempted physical, that it would be the end of my career, because I knew I was not prepared to let him have me. And that meant rejecting him. And no person wants to be in the position of rejecting their boss. You want to charm your boss generally. So it was a scary time. And after I did reject him, you know, I consulted a lawyer immediately and started to do things to protect myself. But there was a long period where I worried about what would happen. I will say for the record, in my experience, you know, for me, Roger Ailes was a harasser, but not a retaliator. And I never felt retaliated against by him. In my situation, I felt ultimately he was a capitalist and decided that was more important to him. And what I now know is that he moved on to other women. So that's how it went down at the time. But I will say this, you know, having taken him on publicly, right? So Gretchen Carlson filed her lawsuit and I was faced with a choice, right? Like, I'm not going to say anything about Gretchen, but let's just say the allegations in that lawsuit did not convince me of anything about Roger. But then I saw reports in the press the day after where women were anonymously coming forward about Roger. And that was when I knew mine was not an isolated incident. And I had to do something. That's when I called Lachlan Murdoch and insisted that he conduct a real investigation, that it would be broad enough to include the Fox News talent and not just the team of producers who had worked with Gretchen, which was the original plan. And that's what Fox News did. And the net was cast wide, and the women did, at great risk to themselves, go in and report on him. And I'm talking about young women who had no power and still have no power in our industry, who found the courage to go in there and talk to a team of investigators at a time when not one of them had been fired. So, right, they did have something to lose, and they had no belief that he was going to get fired. Everyone thought he was going to survive. So think of the courage of those young women who did that at Fox News. To me, those are the heroines of the story.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely, for me, the key takeaway with the Me Too movement is that, you know, a lot of this is a reality for most women, right? And, you know, one of the questions I always get asked in response to that is, well, why don't women speak up? And I think that question just simply ignores all the repercussions if women do speak up, whether it's in their careers or in their personal life. I mean, do you have any sort of advice or examples you can share as to how you've managed the backlash?
After it came out that I, you know, people knew I wasn't backing Ailes publicly. They didn't know why. And then someone leaked my name to the press as an Ailes accuser at a time when no one at Fox News believed this about him. There was significant backlash to me, significant. It was a very difficult, tumultuous time in my career and in my tenure at Fox. Once it came out, you know, what he was, and people came to understand internally how many women there were, including right up to that day, the emotional tide started to turn, and most of my friends came back, and most of my colleagues began to understand, but there's no question there, for some, was a lingering resentment. And it's absolutely true that things would never be the same for me at Fox News again.
Megan has sustained a career that spans more than a decade. And now, on the NBC News Morning Program, Megan is determined to have more in-depth and nuanced discussions about the challenges women face today and how we can overcome these challenges together. So Megan, you know, a lot of these movements are really rooted in sort of sexual harassment. One of the key challenges with that, though, is how do we extend the conversation and keep the movement going to sort of broaden it out to include other forms of discrimination?
Well, I mean, there's so much work to be done, and I could talk all day long about what that work is, but how we do the work is a tougher question because, you know, unlike the civil rights movement, there is no leader, right? There's not one person in charge of this movement. And even the women, like the groups that organized the Women's March, some of those women came out this week and complained about the shutdown of Backpage.com, which is basically a prostitution site and one that promotes sexual trafficking of women who have been blackmailed and threatened into living as forced prostitutes, forced sex slaves. Now, how anybody who organizes a women's march can complain about the shutdown of Backpage, which has resulted in criminal charges, I know not. But I can tell you one thing, whoever that is does not speak for me and is not my leader. I think that's something we suffer from, that we don't have a leader pushing this or a group of leaders that is really going to take this on. And my own thought on it is one of the reasons is politics. We continue to let politics divide us, and it drives me nuts. Why would we divide our army in half? Our female, I like to call it the stiletto army, because I think it's a wink and a nod to where we need to be. I think it's insane. For example, back to the Women's March, the original one, the pro-life groups wanted to go march in it. They were probably Trump voters because Trump was more pro-life and Hillary was more pro-choice, but they still wanted to march in that Women's March, and they had problems with Trump's language about women, his treatment of women, and they were told no. They were told not to come. That's insane. Especially over an issue as divisive as abortion, right? We're never going to get all women to see eye to eye on that. We can't make that the litmus test by which you get into the stiletto army. As far as I'm concerned, if you want in, you're in. Male or female, Democrat or Republican, it shouldn't matter. If you're for female empowerment, come on board. And so I think that's one of the things we need to stop doing, is demonizing people based on their politics. Because this doesn't have to be about politics. You know, it really doesn't. Some of the issues will be, abortion's one of them, but that can be a faction. You know, that can be a splinter group where women who feel strongly about that can go fight for it, and women who feel on the opposite side can go fight the opposite. But when it comes to true equality in the workplace, when it comes to sexual abuse, when it comes to sexual harassment, when it comes to the messaging to little girls, when it comes to female leaders, when it comes to women in power, why would we divide ourselves based on politics? How silly.
That's a really good point. And, you know, one of the other challenges that I think we have is people get tired, right? They get tired of the focus on gender. And with Me Too and Time's Up, one of the key challenges is how we keep the momentum going. So do you have any thoughts on that?
One of the main reasons I launched this show is because I feel like my life is about female empowerment. I genuinely believe this is the cause of my life. And I talked at length with my husband and others about leaving my post at Fox News, which was a powerful one, and one in which, you know, it offered a platform for a strong woman to do battle with strong men and others, which I think was good for little girls. I mean, I had a lot of women stop me to say, I make my daughter watch you, right, so she can see this. However, I really felt I could help foster more empowered women from this post, where we talk about how we get there. And it's not just an example of somebody out there doing it. It's more in depth, and it's more examples, and it's lots of women telling their stories, not lecturing, but telling their stories on how they did it. So that's just a note for the record. But in terms of like fatigue, to keep it going, like to get past gender fatigue and keep this discussion going and expand it, I think we all need to remember that not everything is an 11. Not everything is an 11. And if we get the vapors over everything that hits the news, then nothing is going to shock anybody or warrant their attention, you know, putting down their Cheerios and actually watching the tube. So that's number one. I also think that we have to be open-minded to discussions on this that don't perfectly line up with our own viewpoints and ideologies. And I'll give you the example. Matt Damon was trying to ask for proportionality in the sexual harassment discussion. That's completely reasonable. You are not anti-woman just because you say Ben Affleck and Harvey Weinstein are not exactly the same. That's factual. It's not to excuse anyone's bad behavior. It's just an argument for proportionality. And when Matt Damon got killed for that, I felt it was wrong, because what does it do? It shuts down a million other Matt Damons from even wanting to have this discussion. The men are like, I'm out. It's thermonuclear. I can't touch it. And then more discussions like that can't happen. Why can't we say to the Matt Damons of the world, yes, let's talk about it. I'll give you that Ben Affleck's not the same as Harvey Weinstein. If you'll give me that what Ben Affleck did was wrong, and we shouldn't pussyfoot around it. He should own it. There should be a full-throated apology. And I don't want to be jerked around on how it was just a boy being a boy, right? Like, why can't we have these radically honest discussions? Because we shame them immediately if they don't say exactly what we want to hear said. You know, if it doesn't line up perfectly with what becomes our own dogmatic thinking. And so that's not to say everyone will say it perfectly, or everyone will say stuff that we don't agree with, or that we, you know, everyone will say stuff that we do agree with. But we have to have discussions, meaningful ones. I feel like the Tony Robbins situation is another situation. Did he step in it? Absolutely. He stepped in it. But what would I give to have Tony Robbins on my show and have a meaningful back and forth on what made him say those things? And then I can offer my perspective on why he's wrong.
Megan, I completely agree with you on that. And it's actually one of the things that really winds me up, because I think it's the only way we're going to have change is by having radically honest conversations, as you say. You know, sitting people down and talking about how we can change behavior. And that requires sort of a focus on changing both hearts and minds. It's not enough to just have marches. We need to have honest conversations and look at sort of solutions for how people can change their behavior.
That's right. You don't shame people out of it. You don't shame people out of it. I mean, this is one of the things I learned on Fox News. We were talking about gay marriage for years, and I have many gay friends who really wanted gay marriage to happen. And they would say, because they knew that a lot of people who watch Fox News were evangelical Christians who were against it, you know, you could really make a difference. Why can't you convince them? You know, tell them how bigoted it is. Tell them. And I would say, that won't work. If somebody tells you what a bigot you are, you just stop listening. You get defensive. You start to dislike the person. You know, you start to turn to another corner. What I would do on Fox News, and what I still do, is what if I just offered the other point of view and let them think it over? So I'll put on somebody like Tony Perkins, who's extremely controversial to anyone in favor of gay rights. And they hate Tony Perkins. But my audience didn't hate Tony Perkins. And they would listen if they saw Tony Perkins on the screen talking about gay marriage. But next to Tony Perkins would be a gay rights advocate, someone who could get along with Tony Perkins, who would have a thoughtful discussion that didn't demonize Tony Perkins, or vice versa. You know, Tony Perkins would have to be respectful of the person on the set. And the next thing you know, someone's listening. I'm not saying it all happens in one discussion, but if you put enough of those coins into the bank, you're hoping eventually to have a fortune. And sure enough, within, you know, the 10 years that I began at Fox News, and it happened about 10 years in, we had a Supreme Court ruling going the way of gay marriage. Anyway, I think it's the same thing for women. I don't think we get anywhere by screaming, sexist pig! Now, of course, there are exceptions. You know, you get a Harvey Weinstein or a James Toback scream all day long, as far as I'm concerned. But that's why I say not everything is an 11.
So, Megan, look, we're almost at the end of our show. And on every episode we do this, we try and give our interviewees an opportunity to share any actions or advice that you'd like people to take. So for the women who are listening, you know, what's your advice in terms of how they can empower one another and support one another?
Young women should actively seek mentorship from other women. I will tell you, I had my mom, who was a strong woman, but I never had a very strong female mentor, and I'm sorry to say that. I could have used one. Later on in my career, I've gotten some, but I think be a mentor and seek out a mentor. I think we need to talk, and when it comes to equal pay, let's talk about our salaries. Talk about them. I've done that here at NBC with my female colleagues, and I think we shouldn't be pretending it's a zero-sum game. If you want women to advance in terms of power, you have to help them. And so I think those conversations can be very productive. I also think it can be more subtle. I'll just give you some examples, because having been in the professional workplace now since, oh my God, 1995, that's when I graduated law school, we need to do things like, if you're in a room full of men and a man is speaking, 9 times out of 10, all the eyes will go to the man. If you're in a room full of men and there's one woman, 9 times out of 10, the eyes will go to the woman when she's speaking for a short time, and then they'll immediately go to other men who interrupt her, who can easily steal the spotlight from her. It's a dynamic I've seen countless times, and it's happened to me countless times, and I am no shrinking violet and never have been. So I think women can do each other the favor, the courtesy of not doing that. I make it a point to not let my female talkers in my group get interrupted by people who are not showing her respect. I'll say, she was speaking. And ideally, the woman would say, I'm speaking. But I'll say, she was speaking. Let her finish. And I'll continue my eye contact and my focus on her. I think if you've got a woman coming up the ranks who's not very good but has some potential, work harder on her. Don't just throw her out. You know, work harder to get her better, as opposed to just saying she's no good. Because women, I just think, need more opportunity. I really, really, really believe we have to be more realistic about women and who they are in the office place. I think if you make a woman choose between her children and her career, she will choose her children every time. And so if you're a powerful woman in a workplace, if you're an employer, don't be an idiot. Make the workplace more amenable to the realities of a working mother. And maybe it's sexist to say that women feel that gravitational pull more than men when the children are young to be with them. I don't know whether that's true or not. I just know it's true for women. And so why can't we just acknowledge that and come up with clever solutions? Why can't we make it a little easier for women who have young children to be there during their most formative years so that they're happy at work and happy at the workplace? Why do we have to say we're weak if that's our reality? Bullshit. That doesn't make us weak. It makes us awesome. We want to be great moms and we want to be great career women, and we can be if we can just start redefining these rules that were written for us by men. By men. Women have not been in the positions of power to any extent large enough or for any length of time long enough for these rules to really apply or allow for our ascent and simultaneous happiness. So we need to stop that. We need to rewrite the rules. And I think it can happen on an office level. It can happen on a show level for me, right? It can happen among a group of three women, but ideally it'll start happening as we see more women in power, more women in the boardroom, more women in the courtroom, more women in private offices, more women in the Oval Office.
Absolutely. I mean, I completely agree with that. And I think that's really powerful advice. So for men who are listening, I mean, what's your sort of message for them? What's your advice? How can they empower women?
Well, I mean, I have the luxury of being married to a very evolved man, and it's awesome. You know, it's awesome. So I am a big believer in men. I really am. I know so many amazing men. And so I do think we need to remember that being a strong woman does not mean it has to come at the expense of men. It's why I never buy my daughter one of those t-shirts that reads, girls rule and boys drool. I really genuinely don't like that messaging. Boys are girls' advocates. Men need to be our advocates. And so the more we shame them and mock them and dismiss them as a group, the less on our side they will be. So I think we need to remember we're rooting for them too. And change can be jarring. Change can be jarring. And so we were all raised with the book about Prince Charming saving Cinderella and saving Sleeping Beauty with a kiss. We were all raised with these messages that we are the weaker, lesser sex. That's the truth. And so you can't, now that we're sort of awakening and finding our power, look at the men who, through no fault of their own, were raised with similar messaging and say, get over it this second. We have to give them some time. We have to give them generosity of spirit. And we have to talk to them in a way that is kind and generous and loving. And if they can't get over to the right side, then we'll move on. you know, move on from them. You know, you're not going to waste your breath. But I think most of them can get there if we approach it with our best intentions and our kindest selves. I think the evolved men who are out there need to consider modeling, the importance of modeling, and they need to be our advocates, most of all behind closed doors when we're not there. So when a woman leaves the office and two guys are left behind and the one says, what a rack on that one, the other one has to say, not cool. You know, he doesn't have to like make it a big moment. You don't have to run to human resources with every slight. Right? But they, in subtle ways that don't have to be that confrontational, can really fight for us. I firmly believe that not every slight warrants a fight, but when one does, fight. And that's true for women and men. And I, you know, the men in power, they really do have to get to a zero tolerance kind of place, because the more potential predators they let slide or they try to defend, the less they are trusted by their female staff. And just the worst message it sends to everyone there about where we really stand. So they have to be courageous.
So I think we can all agree there's a ton of really great advice that Megan has provided today in this interview. The best part for me, though, has really been her focus on what both individuals and organizations can do to make workplaces more equal. This is not a woman's issue or a man's issue or even a workplace issue. This is a shared issue, and that means all solutions are on the table. Whether it's speaking up or mentoring women or supporting both women and men with childcare arrangements, all of these solutions combined will go a really long way towards advancing gender equality in the workplace. So look, before I go, I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank all of our listeners for their continued support with our podcast. You know, I read all of your comments on social media, on my LinkedIn, and the reviews that you leave on our podcast channels. It's been amazing to know how positively you're all receiving the show. You know, there are a lot of exciting things that are coming up for She Innovates. Pretty soon, we're going to be releasing our weekly newsletter, where we'll be sharing updates about the podcast and other interesting resources on topics that we discuss on the show. So that's it for now. I just wanted to thank you all again for listening, and I hope to catch you guys again next week.
From the Human Group, She Innovates is a podcast created with support from SAP NextGen, an innovation platform that enables everyone, from individuals, companies, partners, and universities, to connect and innovate with purpose. In doing so, SAP NextGen supports the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals.